Please don't go.
You're sobbing out, messy and snotty tears, punctuated by a lot of whimpers and sniffles.
Please, I'll give you $100. I'll rob a bank and give you $100, okay?
You can't pay me to stay, Boogerface, she mutters back, slipping her old green Vietnam team hoodie into the black duffel bag. That's not how it works.
It's late, and you're tired from crying and sleepy from the dark, so you just sit down on the floor, clutching your teddy bear to your chest and hiccuping and sobbing, your mouth wide open. And it's embarrassing because you're 13 years old, and 13-year-olds don't have teddy bears, and they don't get sleepy at night, and they definitely don't cry. You gulp down a breath and try to force the tears to stop coming out. Miraculously, it works, and within a few seconds, your bountiful weeping is reduced to a few periodic sniffles and prickling eyes. She's filled out in all the right places, but you're still gangly and prepubescent. Awkward joints and a flat chest and stringy hair and braces. You wipe your cheeks with the back of your sleeve. You're wearing your Princess Leia pajama shirt and your cotton pants with the ginkgo leaves on them, but she's ready for the road. A tank top and cargo pants and Doc Martens and a baseball cap. A chunky leather bracelet and a ring of dark dots temporarily tattooed around her right bicep and a small silver piercing in her nose.
What are you doing this for anyway? You demand. Angry. Sad. Petulant.
I wish I didn't have to share a room with you, she growls.
Jade, I'm serious,
you insist. And you know your eyes are glistening.
This whole family's already falling apart, and you're just gonna break it some more?
This family? She bites back, finally turning to face you with her vengeful gray eyes and her sharp sneer.
It's a mess anyway. Whether I stay or not isn't going to make any fucking difference at this point, and you don't even get it. You don't want to get it, Artemis. Trust me, you don't ever want to know why I'm doing this. But I can give you a hint, and it's that our lying excuse for a family hasn't given me much of a choice. I'm not coming back. You got that? I'm not. This is it. So suck it up, you little twerp. I don't want you getting me caught.
I hate you, you shout. And the tears are back, and you wrench your eyes closed.
Fine. Go. In fact, I hope you never come back. I wouldn't want you in a million years. If you even try showing up again, I'm not going to open the door for you. I hate you so much, Jade. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you.
When you're done hating her, the only time you ever really do, but you never let yourself become aware of this. When your throat is raw and you're lying down on the cold hardwood floor and sniffling yourself to sleep, she's gone. All of her posters pulled down and all of her drawers emptied, and a draft comes in through the half-open window, spreading the tangy scent of her lemon hand oil and rustling her goodbye note, thumbtacked crudely to the foot of your bed.
Artemis wakes up on Sunday morning in a foul mood, and she doesn't know why, which just makes it fouler.
How radiant you look today, Paula comments sarcastically from the living room, when Artemis comes into the kitchen wrestling a hairbrush through her ponytail. Was it really all so bad?
Was what? Oh, Artemis mutters, yanking down hard so that she rips through a knot and whimpers.
The lesson? No, it was actually only half as torturous as I thought it'd be.
What is on your mind, then? Paula asks. She adjusts her reading glasses and goes back to the newspaper laid out on the coffee table. Artemis grabs the milk carton off the counter and tosses it back to chug out of it, so she doesn't see the mischievous smirk crawl up her mother's face.
A boy?
Artemis spits out the milk. God, Mom, no! She half coughs when she's recovered. I'm fine, I'm just tired.
Paula lightly and turns the page.
With good reason, I suppose, she says. So, what will you be doing this weekend?
And did you meet Wallace yet? Artemis freezes. Hold up, she replies. How do you know his name exactly? And that he exists? Paula chuckles and takes another sip, her eyes still scanning the page breezily. Mr. Zatara and I chatted several weeks ago, she explains cheerfully. He explained to me that Zatanna's cousin was staying here for the year. Simple. Great. Even her mom had known about Wally before she had. On what planet is that fair? In what galaxy is it okay that she's the last one to be warned? Whatever. I met him, yeah. She grunts back after a second. She puts the milk carton back in the fridge and opens the cabinet beside it to dig up some cereal. As for this weekend, no clue. Sit around and let everyone down? That's basically what she winds up doing. Since Zatanna's probably busy promoting drama club auditions online, and Artemis would rather cut off her own leg than voluntarily hang around Dick, she spends the rest of the day holed up in her room, marathoning bad TV shows on Netflix, and eating her weight in kettle corn while Jade snores and rolls around in Artemis' stomach. Which pretty much causes Artemis an early death by suffocation. Normally, her mom frowns heartily upon this kind of lackadaisical behavior, but Artemis guesses she's pardoned for a few days, since she's, you know, set up to be in charge of a country now. Jade is pretty gassy and cranky, though, so it's not the best lazy afternoon ever. On Sunday, she's even gassier. So Artemis loads up her laptop and hightails it to the library under the guise of studying, which her mom totally buys, even though it's only been a week since school started. So Artemis slinks over to her usual cubicle and corner, the one with an unsavory beanbag instead of a swivel chair, and wastes about 3 hours IMing Zatanna, Dick, and, unfortunately, Wally. She goes back home at 5 and helps her mom make dinner and generally feels like the biggest slug on the surface of planet Earth. Bigger than the one Jade dared her to eat that one time. That she totally ate, because screw you, Jade. In case you need evidence for the proposal that this weekend was an absolute flop, feast your eyes. Smartimus has entered the chat. Zootiful.
Willkommen, darling. Disastrous Dick. At last, the absent plebeian emerges from the woods of radio silence.
Wally Best.
Ugh.
Smartimus.
Good morning to you too, Wally.
Wally Best.
You're mocking me, aren't you?
Zootiful.
Amazing. They're only in here for 6 seconds and they're already launching.
Disastrous Dick.
A miracle of nature.
Wally Best.
Where have you been all weekend anyway? Figured you'd be loitering over here.
Smartimus.
Why would I ever voluntarily loiter there?
Zootiful.
Excuse me. I'm hurt.
Smartimus.
1 second, Zatanna. Disastrous Dick.
Rejected.
Wally Best.
I mean, aren't you and Zatanna BFFs? Isn't that in the blood contract?
Disastrous Dick.
Sign a blood contract with me, Wally.
Wally Best.
Next time you throw gumballs at my window at 3 in the morning, I'm calling the cops, Grayson. I'm not messing around.
Smartimus.
Ooh, scary.
And FYI, no, we don't even have a blood contract.
Zootiful.
Yeah, it was a bone marrow contract, actually.
Smartimus.
Shut up, Zatanna! Wally Best.
Freaks.
Smartimus.
Takes one to know one, huh?
Wally best.
Shove it!
Smartimus.
Shove what? And whereabouts? I need very clear instructions if I'm going to make sure that you're satisfied with the results.
Disastrous dick.
Goodness.
Zootiful.
Jesus, Artemis, that's disgusting. Get a room.
Wally best.
That's what she said. Lol.
Smartimus has left the chat. Zootiful.
Nice going, mister. Can I use ranch dressing as lube?
Artemis wouldn't know where the question comes from, no matter how many times you asked her, or how many times she thought about it. She's clearing her and her mom's dishes from the table, and after she sets them down next to the sink, she slackens a little, leaning her hands on the counter and staying there, with her back turned and her eyes focused on the dish towel. Did Dad ever actually love us? She clamps her mouth closed the second the words spill out, immediately regretting them. Lawrence is kind of an unspoken entity around her mom, because the general consensus in the house is that they're better off pretending he never existed. That way, Artemis doesn't have a dad who abandoned her. She has a mom who stays with her. Everybody wins. All Artemis hears in response, at first, is silence. She cringes, but she doesn't turn around. She just grips the edge of the counter more tightly and prays that she hasn't just eradicated all hopes of talking to her mom for the rest of the night. I mean, because if... She swallows. He had to have, right? At some point. Or at least he loved you and Jade for a while. He'd always told Artemis that she was an accident. So that had nixed most of her stupid kid hopes of being something for him to be proud of. But it doesn't really matter much anymore. I mean, maybe. I'm not, like, trying to excuse him or anything. Good riddance and all. But I guess I just don't... She shrugs, lamely, bowing her head. I don't get it, I guess. Getting married and having kids if he hated obligations and responsibilities so much. Having me. It's just weird trying to understand sometimes. Look, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said anything. It's stupid. I shouldn't even care. Hastily, clumsily, she finishes. I don't. Nice little monologue there, Artemis. Real, articulate, and meaningful. Keep it up. More silence. Artemis bites her lip. Turning around and facing her mom again is looking less and less appealing with every second. Artemis, Paula murmurs. Turn around. Artemis grimaces, feeling an unsteady feeling start to rise in her stomach, but does as she's told. She leans her back against the countertop, bracing herself there with the heels of her palms, and stares fixatedly at her toes. Look at me, Paula says gently. Jeez, Artemis just cannot catch a break here. She lifts her chin a little stiffly and locks eyes with Paula, sucking the inside of her cheek between her teeth and chewing it. There's only one lamp over the kitchen table, and it needs a new bulb, so Paula is bathed in pale and dim yellow light that leaves pronounced shadows under her cheekbones and eyebrows. But Artemis can see that her gray eyes are tender and forbearing. Paula opens her arms. Come here. Artemis shuffles over, slowly. And Paula pats her own knee. Hesitantly, Artemis sits carefully down on it, wrapping her arms around her chest and glancing over at Paula shamefully. Paula lifts a hand
and gently circles Artemis's back with it, encouragingly, understandingly. Artemis feels like a little kid again, one who needs to be told for the 100th time that no, there aren't any monsters living in the ceiling, or that no, Daddy's never coming home, and neither is your sister, but it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. I think at some time, Paula says softly and with care, and Artemis can tell that she's plucking up every word painstakingly. Yes, he did. He was happy. But the man always had a tendency towards self-sufficiency more than anything else. And I think that soon he grew tired of us, of the commitment, of the probability that he would have to change. She raises a finger and points at Artemis. Do not get me wrong. Very quickly, I learned that he did not have the capacity for very much love at all, merely for loyalty. He was cold, and he was selfish. But he would defend us and our honor to the death if he had to, simply because he believed he owed us that much and always will. Love was too dangerous for him, you see. Too much of a waste. And when the time came for him to face his heritage, his duty to his country, we merely became excess weight, and he fled without us. She narrows her eyes. We are better off. Make no mistake. She softens, takes her hand away from Artemis's spine, and pushes some hair out of Artemis's face, cupping her cheek and patting it. But while he may never have loved us, I do think he was grateful for the illusion we gave him, if only for a little while. And now he is happily breaking the law and being a coward about it somewhere, which is all well and good if that is what he wants. But you are so different from him, Artemis. I am so proud of you. Artemis swipes at her eye and wipes the moisture off on her pant leg. She pulls a face. Proud of me? She scoffs. Why? Because you have not run away, Paula says, her voice swelling with emotion that makes Artemis's stomach trip over itself. You never run away, my girl. My wonderful girl. You are so much braver than he was. So much braver than even I am. And I know it gets you in trouble, and I know that I sometimes scold you, but I will always be proud of you for your strength. Always. What is up with these past few weeks? How has her body not run out of water via tear ducts? Oh, God. Wow, Artemis hears herself say shakily. And she bows her head and smiles sheepishly at her wrung hands. Thanks, Mom. Paula claps her on the back and jostles her gently to disembark. Artemis clambers off and stands, laughing slightly, trying to surreptitiously push off the tears at the back of her wrist and probably just looking like she's hitting herself in the face. Anytime, Paula assures her. Now go wash those dishes, you lazy girl. I do not want to see any more dirty plates lying hither and yon in the living room. Artemis rolls her eyes. How quickly things change. She goes to bed that night and sets her alarm for 7 the next morning. And as she pulls the covers up to her chin and rolls over to face the wall where Jade carved her initials with a pocket knife years and years ago, she doesn't actually feel that freaked out about learning to waltz at all. I have a question. Artemis tries not to trip from being taken off guard and glances out of the corner of her eye, to the right, to find Zatanna jogging next to her. Artemis hadn't even heard her approaching, mostly because her eyes had been focused on Cal Durham's butt.
He's only like 6 paces in front of her. She has the best seat in the house. No, wait, he does. Get it? And she hadn't seen fit to pay attention to anything else. It's Wednesday, their weekly mile day in PE, and it's drizzling just slightly. The sky is an unfaltering shade of pale, dreary gray, making everyone's bright yellow uniform t-shirts stand out even more than usual. Zatanna's black gym shorts say Femme Fatale in the white block font for the names. And she'd put an iron-on Slytherin patch on the back of her shirt. Her hair is tied back, ultraviolet scrunchy and all, in a bouncy ponytail. Her sneakers are bright pink with lime green laces. And don't even get Artemis started on her purple leg warmers. Apparently, exercise ignites a need to look like an extra in an 80s jazzercise video. Okay, Artemis replies, panting just a little. Shoot. Would I seem super clingy if I asked why you haven't been texting me the last few days? Zatanna inquires. They both round the corner together. Or wanting to hang out, or calling me, or anything? At all? Artemis hates this whole lying thing. She hates it more than anything. Actually, no, wait. The only thing she hates more than lying is lying to her friends. She hopes that she can pass off the strained quality of her voice as owing to the fact that she's just finished running 3/4 of a mile. I'm sorry, she says sincerely. It's just, my uncle came to visit from out of town. He's been wanting to see me a lot and stuff. So. Okay, so it's only half of a lie. Still. Zatanna hums a little dubiously, but she seems to accept it, her eyes straying to the track in front of them as they pass the finish line and start their 4th lap. How long is he going to be around? She does her best to wave an apathetic hand while mid-run. I mean, it's not like I'm lost in a sea of darkness without you or anything. It's just rough, you know? Not having anyone to always be able to call a fashion disaster. Artemis snorts in spite of herself. I don't know, she answers. Some of her hair is starting to stick to her sweaty forehead. Just kidding, Zatanna says, trying to sound breezy. But Artemis, even though she's barely known her for a year, can still tell that she's being serious. I miss you already, like, a lot. So, your uncle had better finish up his little family reunion, or I'm gonna have to have my father make him an offer he can't refuse. The Zataras literally think that their godfather jokes are the funniest thing in the nation. It's so lame. But, like, to be fair, Artemis is about 98% sure they have mob connections. So, hey, maybe they aren't entirely jokes after all. She doesn't know which is more terrifying. She opens her mouth to promise her best friend that she will try to actually make an effort to spend time with her, that their friendship is not at the risk of imploding, that her Uncle Oliver is not that important, and a host of other uncertainties. But just then, a flash of orange sparks in her peripheral vision. She groans. Seeming to have materialized out of nowhere, Wally is presently jogging backwards on her left, all choice areas of his shirt darkened with sweat, and all the most annoying areas of his face formed around a smirk. Hurry up, ladies. You're holding up traffic. He snickers, his arms pumping, but after a second he cranes his neck, and the smirk fades into a goofy, lovelorn smile, his eyes focusing on a point Artemis can't see. Or in special cases, stopping it. Artemis can't help herself. She turns her head over her shoulder. If she's going to hit him for ogling an innocent girl, she should at least know what the innocent girl looks like, right? She almost trips. Innocent girl is Megan Morse, running only a few paces behind them, her long auburn ponytail swinging behind her, her face flushed with effort and concentration. Two white earbuds are planted firmly in her ears, connected to a bright blue iPod fastened to the waistband of her shorts.
"Keep your eyes on the road, officer,"
Artemis sneers, turning swiftly back around.
"Didn't you finish your mile, like, 2 laps ago?"
"Sure," Wally replies, looking cocky. "Just felt like getting a little extra exercise. That's not a crime, is it?"
"I didn't say it was,"
Artemis grinds out through her clenched teeth.
"Please, Zatanna, be a buffer."
She hears a familiar cackle out of her right ear, and her eyes dart over and, well, so much for Zatanna being a buffer. She's currently running in time with a newly appeared dick and laughing brightly along with him. Perfect.
"What's got you in such a sunny mood?" Wally asks snidely. "And what's with the legs? Lose a fight with a razor?"
Artemis always cuts herself when she shaves her legs, so they're usually decked out in enough circular little band-aids to play connect the dots with. It's not as apparent when she's wearing her socks, and Wally hasn't seen her in her civvies yet anyway, thank God. So this is new intel for him.
"I'm going to answer both of those with a resounding, none of your business,"
Artemis fires back, already losing her patience.
Maybe with an echo of go away.
"Ouch," Wally snickers again. And even though Artemis doesn't turn her head, which is significantly harder to keep up now that Cal's done with his mile and she can't use his butt as an anchor, she can envision Wally's face perfectly. Scrunched up and amused, with a sharp little smile and a show of uneven teeth.
"We'd better give the beast a wide berth, Zat."
"Huh?" Zatanna hums back absently, still in the middle of a hushed conversation with Dick. "And how is that little shrimp keeping up with them anyway? His legs are like the length and density of a Twizzler." "Oh, be nice, Artemis."
"It is law," Dick chirps mirthfully.
Artemis is sorely disappointed that he is too far away to sock in the ear.
"See, even Zatanna thinks you're being a buzzkill," Wally says triumphantly.
"So what's the deal, Moray Eel?"
"Why? Oh, why are all of his insults so terrible?"
"Trust me, if I had a deal, you'd be the last to know," Artemis bites back. And then, unable to stand, being sandwiched between her uncooperative best friend and the boy who takes no hints, she sucks in a short breath and surges ahead, sprinting the rest of the way. Either Wally chooses not to try catching up to her, or she actually beats him. She'll go for the second option. Her side cramps up.
She doesn't care. It's worth it.
Even though she gets a Charlie horse when she's supposed to be doing high heel walks in all of her study. Whatever. Dinah manages to talk him down from calling the hospital because he thinks it's a blood clot, and while he is distracted, Artemis has an opening to steal a fistful of the lemon candies he keeps in the glass jar by his desk. So it's not all bad. Screaming in agony was not the way Artemis had expected her Thursday afternoon to go.
Okay, not agony. And maybe the screaming is more like intermittent yelping. Are you seriously going to argue with her about semantics when her ribs are being crushed by whalebone?
"Why?" she wheezes, after Oliver yanks especially hard on one of the corset laces. "Why are you doing this to me?"
"If there's a surefire way to improve posture overnight," Oliver declares jovially, "it's to get you into a corset. Hold still."
He pushes against her mid-back with his foot and tugs the laces against the force, causing Artemis to make a strangled noise that sounds remarkably similar to the noise that comes out of Jade when she gets stuck in her litter box door.
"Why are you letting him do this to me?"
Artemis rasps at Dinah, who is perched on the arm of the dark green leather couch, taking meticulous notes on her PDA.
Dinah shrugs, smirking up at Artemis over her reading glasses. Good for morale, she replies wryly. Artemis gurgles at her. Oliver ties off the laces tightly at the base of Artemis's back and steps back to admire his handiwork, beaming so that his mustache practically goes diagonal. Don't move, he whispers, throwing his arms forward. It's perfect! It totally isn't, by the way. Do not ever trust Oliver's analysis of any situation, especially if it involves a female wardrobe or an international crisis of pandemic proportions. Artemis is now pretty sure that she knows what it feels like to have two bowling balls compressing her intestines from either side.
I'm going to kill you, she croaks.
It'll be quick, and it'll be painful. Work on getting out of the corset first, Dinah snorts, jutting something down. Which will not be quick.
Speaking from experience, Oliver asks, with a subtle waggle of his eyebrows.
Artemis totally sees it, though. She gags. That Friday, the next day, actually, Mr. Carr hands out their country case study project assignments in World Civ. Or, well, he passes around his bowler hat, which is filled up with slips of paper that everyone's supposed to draw at random, but Artemis definitely catches Raquel Ervin, soccer team captain, looking at about 5 before she settles on 1 and passes it along. The stupid thing's due on October 20th, the week before homecoming, which gives him about a month. Oh, goody, Zatanna exclaims elatedly after she unfolds hers and hands the hat to Artemis. Markovia.
Bialya,
Dick cheers from 2 seats down.
What's yours?
Zatanna inquires, leaning over. The universe must really get a kick out of screwing around with Artemis. Really? There's no other explanation. She stares sourly down at the slip of paper in her hands.
Latava, she grinds out.
Remind Artemis never to ask Oliver for help with her homework again, especially if it involves Latavan history. You'd think that, what with her being the princess of the country, hello, she'd be able to access his glass case of first edition Vlatovan historical encyclopedias and records at her leisure, but no, apparently breaking some vase his grandfather handmade for him from blown glass takes away her basic human rights. Totally his fault. Maybe if he hadn't asked her to try waltzing where there were fragile things perched precariously on precipices, he wouldn't have had to cry himself to sleep. You live and you learn, Oliver. Is this guy seriously her uncle? Are they seriously related by blood, sort of?
However, this is an excellent opportunity, Oliver declares, pointing one finger in the air. We'll hold off on your self-defense lessons for another 2 weeks and bump up the history lessons.
Artemis perks up.
Whoa, what? Self-defense? Now we're talking.
Oliver grumbles something under his breath about
Dinah insisted, and totally barbaric, and could be using this time to teach her how to make chili.
Artemis whirls around to gaze adoringly at Dinah, who's currently fishing out the first volume of Latavan history for her. Dinah instinctively senses Artemis's eyes on her, and glances subtly over her shoulder to wink.
Stop encouraging her, Dinah, Oliver huffs. She needs to learn to stand on her own 2 feet.
Well, gee, all, that sounds just like what self-defense will help her out with, Dinah retorts crisply, locking the glass case and hefting one dark blue tome in one hand. She pivots around on her stiletto and puts one hand on her jutted-out hip, cocking an eyebrow at Oliver. In the meantime, it wouldn't hurt to help her with her history report. I thought you were all over getting her educated on the Vlatavan saga. Cut her some slack.
Yeah, Uncle Oliver, cut me some slack,
Artemis agrees, with a victorious look.
Oliver stares wearily at her before slumping in defeat,
his goatee drooping.
Fine, fine, he concedes begrudgingly. I'll have the butler make us some tea. A wise choice. He tried to make Artemis brew tea that past Monday, and she'd almost killed them all. He sends the request off to the butler, and the three of them all troop off to the sunroom. Oliver doesn't trust Artemis near the artifacts in his study for more than 5 ultra-supervised minutes at a time. And when they enter, Artemis is pleasantly surprised to find that it's pouring rain outside, drenching Oliver's many roses and brightly colored hydrangeas, every drop of water rattling against the glass. September's almost over, so Gotham is pretty much settled into its daily autumn and winter routine of raining constantly. Oliver has expressed his disdain for the weather like 100 times, and Zatanna's complaints about not being able to maintain a decent hairdo during a thunderstorm have not fallen on deaf ears. They haven't given ears many other options, actually. But Artemis has always loved Gotham's grayer months. She doesn't know why, exactly. But apparently it doesn't rain much in Vltava, so that's a major point docked right there. Oliver clears his throat. Artemis, I've been meaning to discuss something with you. Artemis turns, still standing. He's taken a seat in one of the wicker chairs, right next to Arsenal, who's frozen, staring at the opposite wall with bugged-out eyes like, maybe if he stands still enough, Oliver won't notice he's there. Dinah, as always, never sitting, is poised attentively behind him. Artemis blinks at the both of them. They look significantly less obnoxious than they had a couple of weeks ago. She starts to reply, then gives a start and corrects herself. Pardon me. Go for it. I mean, discuss? I mean... Oliver pinches the bridge of his nose, and Dinah folds her lips in to smother a smile. I understand that, even in this short time, many of the things we've gone over have been a bit of a bore for you. Oliver taps his thumbs together, frowning pensively at his lap. So I wanted to offer to teach you something a little different. Something a little more fun. As you know, 2 of Latava's deepest-rooted facets of culture lie in our love for gourmet chili and our love for archery. So, he sits up, puffing up his chest. I am prepared to either teach you cooking or archery, he finishes. Your choice entirely. At the mention of archery, at the thought of grasping a bowstring for the first time since she and Jade had learned it at summer camp, at the thought of Fletching grazing her face like a blade of grass, something sparks in the caverns of Artemis's chest, just for a second, and then it's gone. It's enough, though, to brand an unstoppable grin on her face. Dude, she exclaims, all self-consciousness about verbal poise gone. Is that even a question? Oliver beams. Cooking, then! So Wally texts her at, like, 11 at night next week on Friday, for some reason. New text message. Sent September 24th. From Rudolph. Z's worried about you, you know. Sent text message. To Rudolph. Then why doesn't Z tell me herself? And what's she worried about? New text message. From Rudolph. I don't know, I don't think she wants to bother you. I mean, if you wanted to hang out with her, you'd say so, right? New text message. From Rudolph. I don't actually care or anything, it's just a pain living here when she's all mopey because she burns food all the time and binge eats my Oreos. My Oreos! Sent text message to Rudolph. Why, Wallace, if I didn't know any better, I'd say you had your cousin's best interests at heart. New text message from Rudolph. Just get in touch with her, okay? I don't know if you're always as distant, but if you are, then stop it. She's all flipped out. New text message.
From Rudolph.
Also, do you have a blowtorch? Sent text message to
Rudolph. Yeah, why?
New text message
from Rudolph.
Dick and I want to see what happens when you light a ceiling fan on fire and then turn it on so it spins.
Sent text message
to
Rudolph. Whoa. Wait, what? Since when is he Dick?
New text message
from Rudolph. Huh?
Sent text message
to
Rudolph.
Are you guys, like, suddenly best friends now?
New text message
from Rudolph.
Well, yeah, I guess. Now that you mention it, yeah.
Sent text message
to
Rudolph. I thought you hated him!
New text message
from Rudolph.
I'm prone to change my mind, like, all the time.
New text message
from
Rudolph.
But don't get your hopes up, your worshipfulness. I still hate you.
Sent text message
to
Rudolph.
Oh, good. I was so worried.
New text message
from
Rudolph.
Seriously, though, will you just call Zatanna?
New text message
from
Rudolph.
Please? Like, right now?
Please?
Hello? Zatanna answers calmly. And right then and there, Artemis knows she's in trouble. Because Zatanna didn't leap into the conversation without preamble, the way she always does.
Hey, Artemis greets her hesitantly. Wally told me to call. Everything okay?
Did he now?
Zatanna's voice is airy, the way it gets when she's trying to sound aloof.
Interesting. And, I mean, things were basically fine. Except for the way that I wouldn't know if my best friend was dead or alive if she didn't show up at school every day.
Z, I'm sorry, Artemis mumbles lamely, after a strained beat too long. It's just, my uncle...
Yeah, I... Zatanna's voice trails off, and much of the coldness leaves it, making way for a sort of resigned dullness.
I know. And I'm not going to hate on you hanging out with your uncle. It totally makes sense. I just miss you a lot, you know? When you're not around, the only person I can hang out with is Richard. And Wally's basically a light fixture at this point, I guess. But all I ever hear about from him is you, and no offense, but when he gets started, even my boredom is bored.
Artemis was almost halfway submerged in mushy feelings about how, even though she and Zatanna have only been friends for a year, they still get massive separation anxiety. But she's dunked into ice-cold waters of bewilderment instead at the latter part of that little list of woes.
Oh, come on! Don't act like you're surprised, Zatanna huffs. He's totally into you.
Artemis can feel the color draining from her face and the half-digested food rising in her stomach.
Why did this conversation have to take a sudden turn for the terrifying?
Yeah, sure, Z. And Han Solo's into Princess Leia, she retorts.
Good one. To be fair, she's only seen the first Star Wars movie, at Wally's belligerent behest, and only a week ago on Netflix, but she can still feign essential pop culture wisdom, right?
Oh, whoa. She does not like the sound of Zatanna's laugh.
Watch the other movies, Zatanna finally says cryptically, as though that settles the matter. He has all three of them on Blu-ray. Hint, hint. So this uncle guy of yours, what's he like? Is he cute?
You're repulsive, Artemis splutters, her cheeks reddening. And he's not like anything, really. He's actually super lame, but he has... a thing. This disease thing. So he's trying to reconnect with his family or something.
And is this a relative on your mom's side or your dad's? Zatanna asks.
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out genes here. Genes that could contribute to him being cute.
God, Z! He's like 40! Artemis hisses, appalled. And he has a goatee!
You didn't answer my question, Zatanna sings. And Artemis groans.
To lie or not to lie?
Crap, she said Stop that, Artemis. No, not stop saying Stop noticing. To lie. My mom's.
Funzo, Zatanna says. She's all chipper again, making gross implications and conjuring up words.
By the dubs, can you help decorate the gym with me on the 20th of October? Dick will be there too, and some other people.
Wickedly, she corrects herself.
Natural slaves.
Artemis shakes her head and decides to change the subject.
You know, Wally really loves you a lot.
You are the one saying these words to me?
Zatanna scoffs.
What a world!
Z, I'm serious, Artemis insists. And she doesn't know why she's putting in good words for Wally. Or why the thought of hearing, Wally loves you a lot, Artemis, is making her skin not crawl, but start to get warm.
He wouldn't let me off the hook until I called you. He wanted to make sure you were okay.
So, give him extra spaghetti tonight or something.
Dad's out of town, so we're having Taco Bell, Zatanna chirps. But when she speaks again, her voice is softer.
Thanks for the memo, Art.
Artemis smiles just slightly to herself, before noticing out of the corner of her eye that it's already 11:30.
Hey, it's late, so I think I'm going to turn in, she says with a sigh.
But still friends?
Are you joking? Zatanna snorts. Like you'd ever get out of this friendship that easily.
Night.
Night, Artemis replies, and hangs up. She stares at her phone screen for a while and thumbs through all of the numbers. It's old, so there are a few names that make her stomach stumble a little. Cameron, her friend from Gotham North, who she never talks to anymore. Jade, her junior high cell phone number, now deactivated. Dad, at his work number.
Artemis bites her lip and frowns hesitantly at the contact labeled Dad. After a while, after hovering her thumb over the screen for what feels like forever, she taps the little trash can icon before she can second-guess herself and clicks the screen off.
If it had to be anyone, anyone, anyone at all, why him? And why on a Monday?
Artemis? Dick exclaims, like the cat that's just swallowed maybe a dozen canaries and plans on eating a few more. He's poised on his tiptoes on the street corner, right beside her, grinning widely with one hand on his backpack strap and the other perched on his hip.
What are you doing on this posh side of town? And without Zatanna?
Artemis has inherited a lot of helpful traits. A propensity for violence, for example. But lying is not, and never will be, one of them.
She flummoxes. Here to see my cousin. She's in the state spelling bee. Over here. She's having a party at her mansion for the spelling bee.
She does not know why it has taken her this long to notice that Wayne Manor is about three properties down the street from Oliver's villa.
Good work, girl genius Artemis Croc. No wonder you're not in the computer club.
Dick springs back and forth on the balls of his feet, never dropping the shark-like grin.
Artemis quickly goes through potential last requests.
COOL? He croons, waggling his eyebrows.
Hope you have lots of F-U-N. T-H-A-N-K-S, Artemis growls, practically threatens, shouldering past him.
So who's your cousin?
He chirps, twirling around to face her retreating back.
Everybody knows everybody around here. Maybe, I don't know, I've accidentally hacked their security cameras before.
An organ starts playing in Artemis's head. It sounds like a funeral march.
She scratches her head, stuttering. They just moved here.
Yeah, so you probably don't know them. They don't really get out much, very shy and stuff.
Uh-huh, Dick breathes with a slow nod.
Clearly not genetic.
Artemis bristles.
Can I go now?
Oh, right, of course. It must be stressful for someone so meek and unassuming to be trapped without you.
Dick giggles.
A bientôt.
Oh, and feel free to drop by the manor on your way back from your wild party. We're having salmon for dinner.
Thank you. I will keep that in mind,
Artemis grinds out, and briskly walks as far away from Dick as possible.
Good lord, Oliver exclaims with high eyebrows when Artemis comes stomping into the dining room for her banquet behavior lessons.
Did someone try to rob you?
Certainly not, Dinah says crisply, licking her thumb and turning a page in her true crime novel.
If they had, she'd have their blood on her boots.
Thanks, Dinah.
No, Artemis grumbles back, shedding her book bag and blazer. But I think I'm going to have to be a little tighter about maintaining cover. My friend just caught me walking over here outside.
Oliver rises from the table, his eyes intent.
How much does he know? He demands.
Dinah, write up an assassination form. That's an order.
All Artemis is saying is Dick's damn lucky that all of Latava's best assassins are preoccupied with corrupt Bialia politicians right now. Otherwise, he would be in so much trouble.
A little known fact is that Vlatavan history alternates between being really terrible and really hilarious. It makes sense that it's so little known, because no one in their right mind would care about Vlatava, the country that famously had an internal war over asparagus fields in the 1850s, and whose national bird is the wood pigeon. But Artemis seriously pities anyone who doesn't know some of this stuff.
Oliver tells her that King Ulf had an estranged brother, Dietrich, who was convinced that his destiny in life was to seek out a magical field where potatoes grew year-round in excess. But then Dietrich's children had died of measles, so he got kind of bummed out and became a priest or something. And then there's Queen Sybil's kids, Joseph, Anton, and Ilsa. Ilsa was the only one who ever got anything done. But when she was a kid, she and Joseph used to lock their dad, King Amadeus, who was from Germany, in the dungeons and stuff, because they thought it was funny. Ilsa literally locked everyone in the dungeons, though. One time, she locked her horse down there for bucking too much. And then, there was this flood in 1892 when Belinda was in charge that screwed up all of Latava's roads big time. So they used all the town baker's day-old breads and the local farmer's dud pumpkins to sort of pave the roads until they could get enough rocks for it. And then Brunhilde, like, cut off Anton's hand because she was convinced the royal family had somehow murdered her twin brother Thomas, even though he died of dysentery. But Anton took it like a champ and got a fake hand made out of silver. How cool is that? Whatever, Brunhilde.
The archery fad was started in 1771, when Queen Camilla, Ulf's wife, some, like, barmaid he found in Austria, carted along her bow and arrow and targets from her farm after they got married, and she moved into the palace. She used to practice on the servants who didn't make her foot bath water warm enough. With soft-tip arrows, don't worry. Ever since then, though, the Vlatavan people have been critically unable to grow out of their giant history boner for Camilla, so archery has actually become their national sport. Like, if you were a teenager in Vlatava and you don't do archery, it's basically the equivalent of being Billy Batson here.
Yeah.
Despite how ridiculous all of it is, though,
Artemis remembers it all pretty well. Well enough for her to build up a super solid country case study, with a poster board and everything, one that folds out into three panels, and gets a passing grade on the quiz Oliver surprises her with on Thursday the 7th. Quiz. October 7th, 2011. 1. Who was King of Latava during World War I? For what was he famous? King Marius. He famously slept through the assassination of Franz Ferdinand. 2. What ought one do when asked to dance at a formal ball by a representative from one of Latava's allied countries? Accept graciously. Dance a perfect Latavan waltz. Do not embarrass the Latavan royal family under any circumstances. Curtsy when you are done. 3. Define Machiavellianism. The policy of gaining and maintaining political power, particularly the princely kind, by being a lying, manipulative pukkiu. 4. Translate the following sentence into Vlatavan. On Wednesdays, I must attend meetings with the president of Czechoslovakia. The question is flawed. It's called the Czech Republic and has been since the dissolution of Czechoslovakia in 1993. God, Oliver. Fine. Trusty nas. Nanyar dyar mikle. Tiksanazar. Presidentu Czechoslovakia. 5. Name 3 of Latava's largest exports. Chili powder, oakwood thumb rings, goat milk. 6. On what date was the Vlatavan monarchy reinstated? February 29, 1992. 7. Describe the proper etiquette to be used when taken hostage by a hostile party. Ask for water when necessary. Do not aggravate or nag kidnappers. Do what they say. Tactfully mention favorable facts about Vlatava. And find a way out of your bonds so that you can strangle them with your bare hands in time for pâté at the palace. 8. Define contingent sovereignty. The modern philosophy of refusing the policy of non-intervention in international affairs. 9. Which war was eventually resolved by Princess Ilsa's purchase of 60 mules? The Great Asparagus War of 1851. 10. List all of Latvian national holidays and their dates. Christmas Eve, December 24th. Christmas Day, December 25th. Easter Sunday varies. Easter Monday varies. Ash Wednesday varies. Asparagus Day, April 9th. Good Friday varies. Yai, June 22nd. National Wine Day. Restoration of Independence Day, February 29th. Ulf Day, October 17th. Feline Celebration Day / New Year's Day, January 1st. Overlooked Day, May 25th. Mourning Day, November 11th. And, depending on the year, the entire week of the Olympics. 11. Explain the history behind Asparagus Day, Restoration of Independence Day, Ulf Day, Feline Celebration Day, Overlooked Day, and Mourning Day. Wow, Ollie. Way to give away, like, 6 of the answers. You're lucky these are on the second page. Asparagus Day. Created in 1851 to celebrate the end of the Great Asparagus War. Restoration of Independence Day. Falls on the date of Latava's independence from the Soviet Union at the end of the Cold War. Ulf Day. Created in 1972 to honor Latava's first king and founder. Feline Celebration Day. Instated by Queen Lara some months before her death in a fit of senility, falls on the date of birth of Schrödinger, the royal cat. Queen Lara was such a weirdo. Also, New Year's Day, which is kind of confusing. Overlooked Day. Created sometime in the 19th century by either Belinda, Joanna, or Vida, one of whom felt like creating a national holiday and decided that May 25th needed some recognition or something. Mourning Day. The date of Queen Perdita's death. All of Latavans get the day off work, and volley shots are fired at sunset by the Royal Guard. 12. What type of government does Vlatava have? Parliamentary monarchy. You might even say they have an oligarchy. If you don't give me extra credit for that amazing joke, I swear. 13. Under what circumstances should a member of the royal family run away from his or her duties?
Any circumstances they want.
14. How do you say quiet, please, in Vlatavan?
No Christ Lodzu.
15. What kind of gambling is legal in Vlatava?
None, because Vlatava's boring.
16. Answer with your full royal name and title. Follow with the full royal name and title of the current king of Vlatava. Her Royal Highness Princess Artemis Perdita Leanne something of Vlatava, the ferocious and unwilling, watcher of the asparagus fields, archer of Sybil, revered discipline case, the conqueror.
His revered majesty King Oliver, the embarrassing, who sucks.
She thought she did okay on that quiz, but apparently she accidentally wrote the Vlatavan phrase for fall down, please, instead of quiet, please, and the Great Asparagus War happened in 1854, not 1851, and Oliver didn't appreciate her full royal name and title answers, or her amazing pun, or her colorful Vlatavan insults stuck in the answer about Machiavellianism, which he also marked her down for. And strangling your kidnappers is apparently frowned upon by Vlatavan etiquette standards. This is the dumbest country in history. Artemis would take chemistry homework over Ollie's stupid quizzes any day. No, that's a lie. Note to self. Gauche caviar isn't caviar made by peasants. It's a pejorative French term for hypocritical socialists. Also, Dinah wants a list of top 10 admirable women by Tuesday, 10-11. If Artemis's friends and acquaintances had royal names and titles. Her Fashionable Highness Zatanna Sindela Zarina Zatara, defender of the pantsless principle, wielder of card tricks and go-go boots, the chic and marvelous manipulator of the law, the magician. His Malevolent Highness Richard John Grayson, the cackling wunderkind of Brahm, Count of the Orfordian Potato Fields, the Felonious. His Stupid Hotness, Highness, whatever, Wallace Rudolph West, the freckled runner of Phineas, consumer of cheeseburgers, the alchemist, the flea-footed, the annoying. His Serene Majesty Cal Durham, the high-cheekboned, the pensive, explorer of the Adriatic. The shouldered one.
Connor, the murderous peasant.
Added October 27th. Her Merciful Majesty Megan Morse, the meek, protector of the people, keeper of the Oreos, braider of hair. Artemis Croc's list of top 10 admirable women, in no particular order. Composed October 9th. 1. Lucy Liu. Next to the dictionary definition of a baller, you will not, as Wally insists, find a picture of Han Solo. You will find a picture of Lucy Liu. 2. Princess Grace. Otherwise known as the one person on the planet Artemis has heard of who could deal with just becoming a princess. She ran a small principality. She always played cool femme fatales when she did movies. She had great hair. Artemis doesn't even know why she bothered officially becoming a princess, because she was basically one to begin with. And she solved the Monaco succession crisis. She was pretty cool. If Artemis does have to roll with this princess thing, at least she has a slight chance of being like Grace Kelly. Except for the fact that her family had to pay dowry. That was lame. Artemis is not joking when she says she would marry Grace Kelly for free. 3. Dinah Lance. And she's not just doing this to suck up, either.
Dinah could murder someone in high heels without spilling her champagne or messing up her hair, and that is amazing. 4. Mari Hasegawa. Not that Artemis was alive during the Vietnam War or anything, but she's 110% sure it sucked and was stupid, and Mari Hasegawa had the same idea, and she did a bunch of awesome stuff for the WALPF. 5. Hermione Granger. Ron's right. He and Harry would not have lasted 2 days without Hermione, or probably 2 hours. It's been a while since Artemis read the books, but she definitely remembers Hermione doing all the work, and it taking way too long for Ron to realize how totally awesome she was. 6. Princess Leia. Oh, did you want to put Princess Leia in a skimpy outfit? Allow her to brutally strangle you while wearing that. Wally's a moron. Princess Leia is the true baller of Star Wars. 7. Eleanor Roosevelt and Margaret Thatcher are tied. Does she even need a reason? 8. Her mom, probably. Even though she's crazy overbearing sometimes, she could shut up anybody on the planet with a single glare if she wanted to. And that takes talent. Artemis hopes it's genetic. 9. Alice from Alice in Wonderland. She's pretty level-headed for all the crap she has to go through. And she outsmarts the Queen of Hearts, and she makes friends with a psycho-teleporting cat, and she goes back home after all of it and doesn't even care how different she is. Alice is Artemis' hero. 10. Kate Bishop. Oh, come on, she's awesome! Teenage, non-superpowered archer who's on a team of metahumans? Coped with being assaulted by rising above the spineless jerks who did it and taking up combat training and saving the world? Because who gives a crap? Gives her mentor what for on a daily basis and is always right? Best lady ever. A good list, Dinah proclaims sagely, and Artemis feels a deep sense of pride and fulfillment.
Who the blazes is Hermione Granger?
Oliver demands. And Artemis feels a deep sense of shame and horror. The rest of the lesson basically consists of Artemis having to extensively expand on every single choice for Ollie's benefit, while Dinah downs cheese hors d'oeuvres like they're Tic Tacs. And when the grandfather clock rings out 5 o'clock, Artemis is already halfway off the couch. She is just about to cross the street and head down the sidewalk back towards home, but she halts in her tracks and glances to the right, at the Zatara house down the block, with a single light on downstairs, splashing rich gold onto the window panes. Something pangs against her chest that pushes her feet into turning in a different direction, and as night starts to creep up the edges of the sky, she heads for Zatanna's.